Good afternoon. Welcome to Ask an Atheist, where we ask ourselves the important questions, like if potatoes are a New World food, did the indigenous peoples of North America have pierogi?
That's an important question to ask.
Yeah.
We already know that they didn't have linguine, and that's why clams went unmolested for so long.
I ain't touching that. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. That's our voicemail number, toll-free nationwide. I am Generalissimo Sam Mulvey, here with you after the conclusion of the annual war. Okay. First and foremost, I'm going to step off that particular train and be not famous. What did I say? Famous? I don't know. I'm having the linked database for my words is just completely wrong today. It's great. I'm going to be serious, not famous. Those things are opposed. Those are opposed concepts. I'm going to be serious for a moment. There is a lot of stuff happening in the news today, and I expect a lot of people might be expecting me to talk about it. I'm going to suggest that you go to our website and search for the more than a dozen episodes where we talk about stuff like this. File off the serial numbers and just listen to that. I said a while ago that we would stop talking about religiously motivated violence because it's becoming so commonplace. It's becoming difficult to say new things. And I just thought I would remind you of that. We're not ignoring it because we're not paying attention. We're not ignoring it because it's not a problem. There just comes a point where the disgust grows greater than my ability to speak, and we are at that point. If you guys want to add anything now, now would be the time, but I'd like to close the subject for the rest. Yep,
same
if that's
dog,
okay with you.
Day.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so getting back on the train of ridiculousness that is in no way famous. This is not a thing that makes me famous. I'm just never going to let myself live that one down. The war, the annual war over the reason for the sneezing, it has now concluded. It's broadcast day, and we asked online, how did everyone survive the war? Paul from Ashford writes, it was close. Justin from Tacoma said it ended up gassy. A different Justin from Tacoma, there are two. I took heavy fire from a sleigh, and I survived by taking out one of its engines and posted a photo of fruits from a recent game hunting trip. do you hail from Pennsylvania Avenue there? Anyway.
He's saying he ate caribou. He's saying he ate reindeer. Okay. I'm pretty sure that's what he's on
about. I've had reindeer jerky. That's pretty good. Kyle from Tacoma writes, there may be some post-traumatic distress, but yes. Megan from Texas writes, didn't see much action, but yes. Mark from Cranston, Rhode Island, I lost some good buddies. Kate from California, it helped that I was on command staff instead of a foot soldier. Neil from the internet said, simply, I did. Michael from the internet writes, I was heavily wounded in the battle at the local shopping center. We all thought it was just another normal day when suddenly we were hit and pinned down by a barrage of happy holidays. The horror, the unspeakable, unimaginable horror. Aubrey from Illinois writes, I work in retail. I lost. Help decorate the store. September 25th. Holiday music has been playing since November 12th. Not good holiday music. Sanitized holiday music. Would actually like to have heard one good track if I had to listen to any. Chris from Portland writes, don't be fooled by the lull in the action. There are so many more battles ahead of us. They may have receded, but you can be assured they're plotting the next battle. Gather your supplies while you can. Take your rest, but be on alert. The sneaky bastards are everywhere. Brandon from Minneapolis writes, I was drunk and avoiding my responsibilities unless they came my way, and I didn't have a choice. Michael from Facebook writes, marked safe during the war on Christmas. Ron from Florida writes, I lost a cousin. She got hit with a happy holidays gassing. You can read into that.
What?
I mean, I think it's a biological kind of gassing, if you catch my drift.
Gotcha.
And if you're catching my drift, my apologies, I had beans for lunch.
I was going to say deviled eggs.
Yeah. Couldn't take it on, poor girl. Avery from Seattle writes, my neighbors came by with gifts and a card, so I said Merry Christmas to them. I was worried that I may have started a war on Christmas. A war on Muslims, Buddhists, or, God forbid, atheists. Claire from the internet writes, historically, more soldiers have been felled by infectious disease than battle wounds. Alas, I contracted a bad rhinovirus and was unable to eat a baby on Christmas due to the severe congestion and lack of appetite. So how did so Josh and Dan, because I neglected to introduce you guys because we've been talking for a while and I forget that the conversation is now joined by our four listeners. So Josh, how did your holidays go?
Uneventful, mostly. I mean just some boomerisms going on, but
it's like spoonerisms but with more Metamucil.
Yeah, a lot more Metamucil.
Okay.
But just basically had to go to other rooms because just nonstop ranting.
Oh, really? Oh, I'm so sorry.
Every single, but all was good. It was a good holiday. Just spent time with the family.
Did you head over the pass? Did you head back that way?
No, I do it over here.
Oh, right on.
I don't dare go over that time.
How about you, Dan?
We had kind of a miracle. At 11:55 p.m. on Life Day Eve, the blaster fire stopped for just a few minutes, and the Star Wars nearly came to an end. We got together with the rebels and the stormtroopers. We played a little bantha ball. And then just a short time later, we were ordered to start killing each other again. And all of that progress we nearly made for humanity just came to an abrupt end.
I can't even escape it on my own darn show. Gah! Ah, it's all right. It's cool. There's a movie out. Everybody's into it. It's actually nice to see people happy about things that aren't the reason for the sneezing. It's like, yeah, it's a good movie. I'm not going to see it. Although it was suggested to me that we watch all 9 movies at once.
No.
That might be a bit much.
At once? Like at the same time?
Yeah, so like 9 screens.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well, I'm familiar with like the machete order where you go 4, 5, 2, 3, 6.
Right.
And I don't think...
And one have is they, not even on it.
Have it's they
not,
modified no. the machete order at all? Or are they just appending onto the machete order? Given
that was something
movies?
I was going to ask about. But then I would like to ask the internet user known as Machete, who created the machete order. Where do you fit in the Christmas special? I mean, you've eliminated episode 1, but you can't eliminate the Christmas special.
Which is the first movie that actually has Boba Fett in it?
That would be
episode 5.
Okay, so it'd have to be immediately before episode 5.
True.
And now you have the Mandalovaltine or something like that you
right.
contend with,
yeah.
which everybody loves because Facebook is now Baby Yoda space. And
or shaved Gizmo from Gremlins.
Or space, shaved Gizmo you know. From Gremlins. I'm glad everybody else noticed that because then I didn't have to say it. Because one does get tired of being that guy. Well, I was certified 4F this war. I have a small collection of ER badges, of ER tags, to the point where after a while I just stopped taking them off just to save time. I gotta have my gallbladder out, actually. Well, they say I have gallstones. Mm-hmm. There is no evidence of gallstones. They say it's probably sludge in there. Like, okay.
There's gall sludge?
I guess. I don't know. I mean, like, I know that a lot of medicine troubleshooting happens the way that I troubleshoot a computer, but like okay, there comes a point
my
where
God.
Like there comes a point where like if an RTC fails on a server, I don't need that. I just toss it out of there. Just toss it out. Because whatever. It's a server. It's connected to the internet. It's always going to have good time. So it's weird when your doctor treats your gallbladder like a real-time clock on a server.
Would you say it sounds galling?
Yeah, I am a galled. I don't know.
I'm just suddenly aware of a whole new world of like gall geology. Like if there's gallstones, then there's
gall.
Well, okay, wait. I didn't know that there was stuff other than gallstones. Now there's gall sludge. Is there gall sand?
Yeah.
Is there?
Well, yeah. That's
the stones.
What, actually, they're
sand.
Assuming that it's like sand and sludge in there. Right
Are there gall carbonaceous chondrites? Are there gall fossils? We should explore this.
I take out my gallbladder, and there's like a tiny shrimp I ate when I was like 12.
Right. Encased in gall basalt,
encased in galbanite.
Galbanite.
If we want to do the callback, and then I had a gallbladder attack, and so that's why they're assuming, which is a unique kind of pain. And then I had a dentrifus structural failure just this week, so I spent this week on painkillers, which is fun.
Sort of by definition, well, assuming that you don't actually have to treat the pain,
right? I get the idea that that's sort of a thing, but it's a lot less fun when you need them. I'll just put it that way. I'm actually terrified of painkillers, so I always tend to have it, or like the very second I feel like I can stop taking it, I stop taking it. But so I am quite enthused that the war went as well as it did in my absence, and I thank you all. I thank everyone on behalf of anti-Santa Command.
Well, I mean, also
or
next
SANTCOM.
But I mean, the war they keep on mentioning gets earlier and earlier, but now we have to start planning for the war on Thanksgiving. But
yeah.
Now before Thanksgiving, also we got the war on Easter coming too. So
yeah.
I mean, it's just no reprieve for the wicked.
That's true. Yeah, there's literally I the thing is, Easter stays out of my way. Like that the reason I hate Christmas so much is that it's so oppressive. It's everybody had like you have to go in the room and then Santa shows up on the screen. Emmanuel Santa Steen shows up and you have to have your 5 minutes Santa love. Otherwise the party won't let you have your victory gin. All right, get it now?
Yep, I get it now.
All right, cool.
Yep,
all right.
Just took a minute.
Yeah. It's just that the holiday is so socially oppressive. I mean, there's like all the metrics for mental health spike in December.
Yep.
It's not because everybody's worried that a number's going to increment. You know what I mean? It's not like, oh, the end of the year and I totally bailed on my get healthy this year.
Right.
Thing. Like that drama was in March.
Yeah.
This is December. Now you're thinking about what you're the next thing you're going to bail on is. It's the holiday. It's good for kids, I guess, cuz I mean there's a lot of commerce there. but it seems to be it seems to be a bummer for most everybody else. And so, you know, everybody's like, "Oh, I am not an assassin of joy. I'm not going to bag on Christmas. I'm that guy. I'll stand up and say, no. What if it wasn't that much fun? Like, are you having fun? No. Who are you having fun? Not really. Are you having fun? No. Who are we protecting? Like, you know, it's like when you realize we're all hiding the fact that Santa isn't real from everybody.
Wait, what?
From each other? Yeah. I'm at SANTCOM. Of course, I'm not gonna.
If you start telling kids that Santa isn't real, that's how you create a whole generation of atheists.
It's like my nephew who said he didn't believe in Santa this year. If he doesn't believe in Santa this year, and we're all like pretending to believe in Santa, who is being supported by this shared hallucination of a red man who anti-thieves you?
I sort of think of it as kind of like, it's like a game. It's like playing pretend for fun. Because like, when do adults outside of the political realm ever actually like play pretend?
Are you having fun?
With Christmas stuff?
Yeah.
I'm usually having fun.
I mean, if you want D&D, we can do D&D.
We have significantly cut back on sort of like the materialism to it. Where, you know, we used to do like gifts for everybody. Everybody got gifts for everybody.
Yeah.
And everybody, you know, destroys their bank accounts. And now we have like a family round robin. Where it's like, you know, we all draw names and you get one gift for one person and you don't spend more than, you know, $20 or $50 depending on which family we're working with. And like, it's kind of taken a lot of the pressure off. And a lot of the stuff I do enjoy, I like the decorating and, although I will say the feasting, I'm kind of past the feasting. Mm. I feel like the pressure to eat so much food when there's so many different varieties of food is like just kind of overwhelming. And I don't have the stomach capacity that I had as a 14-year-old when I could just down a million deviled eggs followed with ham and turkey. Like now it's kind of like, well,
speaking of gas warfare,
right? Yeah. Yeah. I got to take like, you know, a small plate and a little bit of this and a little bit of that. And usually like 3/4 of the way through a small plate where I have a small amount of everything, I'm kind of like, all right, now I'm going to feel bloated and uncomfortable for the next 2 hours. Granted, I enjoy the company of my family. I enjoy the conversations. We're not a drama family, you know, like, well, actually we're literally a drama family. Every one of us has stage performance in their background, but the drama stays there. It doesn't actually we don't get in arguments or shouting matches or anything
like that.
At holiday get together.
That is a weird thing about performing families. My family is the same way. We're all musicians and comedians and we're all big and boisterous and dramatic, but we don't. It's not like we're enhancing the drama and sniping at each other. We're just being loud at each other.
Right.
Yeah. It's a different thing.
Well, because you know all the dramatic tricks that people would employ, the flourishes and all that, so it's, they're less useful.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it is sort of an equalizer.
And you know you're not going to impress anybody by making a scene because we've all made better scenes and got paid for it.
Yeah, exactly. Well, apparently I have someone who perhaps purports to be an ally here. A Christmas nativity scene erected and maintained by a private citizen has had its Mary statue stolen from her place at the Washington State Capitol lawn. The Wesleyus family has sponsored the nativity scene since 2007, with 18-year-old Nick Wesleyus taking over responsibilities this year. The family was moved to sponsor the nativity scene after observing that the Capitol Rotunda was host to a large Hanukkah menorah display one winter. Since then, all holiday displays have been moved to the rotunda to the Capitol lawn. Wesleyus stated that the nativity was a symbol of hope that could plant a seed for those who view it. I'm assuming it's a seed of a Christianity tree, but whatever. They have struggled nearly every year with a theft of the baby Jesus figurine, but this is the year that Mary has disappeared. Don't do this. Don't. I mean, it's hilarious. Yoshi's Island 2, Maria is missing. Super Nintendo reference, anyone?
Oh, sorry. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I am just failing my references today. don't do this. And in fact, I'll go one further. I hate nativity scenes. It's part and parcel. Like, it's the badge of the people I fight against in the war on Christmas. But hey, Wesleyus family, hit me up. I will put tracking software in your baby Jesus.
Well, you got to do it for Mary this time, too, though.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So now we have to tag all the...
No, we'll tag the entire Jesus family, or Christ family, because Christ is his last name, right? So it's the Christ family, clearly.
And the camels. Oh.
We'll tag the entire Christ family like they're going into a kid's camp from the feds. How about that?
Well, that'd be better tracking than how we're tracking our people that we put in concentration camps.
Right, yeah, you're going to have to do better than just some Sharpie on the forearm.
Yeah, I mean, they are literally one step from tattoos. It's it's coming.
Yeah, it's
well, that's the benefit to a tattoo, though. You can track someone effectively with a tattoo with a Sharpie.
And this is,
you know,
how
you can wash it off when you sell them or whatever they're doing,
or etch it in.
And this is how it happens to me too. Like, this is what I'm talking about, is the dark humor gene that I've inherited from said dramatic people.
Right.
When I'm talking about stuff like this, I want to reach. I want to be kind of wry about something, and like saying that the nativity scene will plant a seed of something that people have never seen before. This is Christianity in the freaking United States. Everyone has seen this before.
Right.
This is Gone with the Wind. We've all seen it. We're all tired of it. We don't care how great Clark Gable is. Whatever.
28 amazing inventions you won't believe exist.
Exactly.
Christianity.
Exactly. And you know, and so I want to be wry, and I reach for something dark, but because of the times we live in, I end up reaching for freaking child concentration camps. And that's the world we live in. And I want to say, oh, I shouldn't say that because that's too dark. And then another part of me says, well, one, that's a part of your humor. And two, perhaps it's a good idea to remind people that these freaking camps still exist.
Yeah, for those who might have forgotten since they were first reported on like 3 years ago.
Yeah.
Still have child concentration camps going in this country.
Yep.
Still going on. Was it
bigger
last
and more
month,
funding?
700 women disappeared from
really?
These camps.
I missed that. Jeez. Did they track them down, or is that just kind of a but they're gone?
They just can't identify where they're at. They just lost track of where they're keeping them, or
somebody ask Albert Speer. This is Ask an Atheist. 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. I'm ejecting from this conversation as fast as I can. I hate the mess I've created. We're gonna pretend to go into the break, and when we pretend to come back, we're gonna continue talking about the president, but we're gonna shift gears to a wind-driven one. I knew I was going to need this music when I looked at the show notes and I see Trump, 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 Trump. And I'm like, oh yeah, best words, everyone. Best words, Monday to Friday.
Is this about the 15 flushes?
Yeah. No. No, it's not even about that. 15 flushes. Dude, they make 2,000 flushes. Go get that.
That was weeks ago, right?
Like, yeah, that was flushes? Yeah, that was three insane breaks ago.
Except for he keeps bringing it back. And then also explosive dishwashers this week.
Explosive dishwashers?
Yes, they explode and everything cleans. And
what does that have to do with the toilet? Like, explosive diarrhea, okay. I've seen what you eat. But... dishwashers? Well, okay, again, I've seen what you eat. There's probably just a mass of pork fat right behind the drain.
Ooh.
Yeah, because, I mean, all that KFC, they got to scrape off the White House China. Or, sorry, White China. House China.
China.
Okay, I love this story. This is one of those stories that just, like I said, this is a story that 2014 Sam would have absolutely loved. Because it's almost like the president went into free jazz. Donald Trump fell into a lilting tirade against wind turbines during a recent speech to a conservative youth gathering, suggesting that windmills are killing bald eagles with impunity and are destroying the bird population, and are turned off after reaching a threshold number of eagle kills. Right, I forgot that. I forgot that part. He also asserted that as someone who has studied wind energy more than anybody. He knows that turbines are spewing tremendous gases and fumes into the atmosphere, causing a huge carbon footprint. Trump falsely stated that almost none of the manufacturing takes place in the U.S., where in reality, the U.S. is one of the world's top producers of wind farm infrastructure, alongside China, Germany, and just Spain. All right.
Just Spain.
So elephant in the room. In fact, elephant footprint in the room. When the president talks about a carbon footprint, do you think he's thinking of an actual footprint?
Oh, no, absolutely. He thinks there's a giant around that's planting these windmills. And so it's the gas coming from that giant that he's talking about.
Right.
Because he just had deviled eggs.
This giant that needs like 15 flushes.
Fee, fi, fo, fire. I'm a renewable energy hire. I love it. Can we have that movie? Disney, hook us up.
Huh.
I'll do better than Frozen.
Fun and fancy free energy.
Yeah. God. Mm. So we were at a holiday party, me and Becky. And Becky was like out. Like, just being Becky about the president. You know how she is when she gets... Oh, my God, what is this like this? And it's when Becky's at her absolute best. She doesn't want you to know this, but she's an excellent ranter. Like, she doesn't do it on the air very often. She's more... She kind of paces herself a little bit more on the air. But when it's just her and me, she gets into it. Like, it's super cool.
I've seen a few great Becky rants.
Yeah, yeah. And so she's getting into it. And I was like, hey, hang on, Becky. This is art. But hang on. Just read... It helps that we had been talking about music for like 2 hours before this, but just read it at like at a standard pace. And she starts reading it and I go, doom, doom, da, doom, doom, da, doom, doom. You know, I do, you know, I start doing a jazz walk track and she's like, oh my God. I'm like, yeah, this is free verse. This is like, he doesn't care what the words mean. He's just saying them because they sound good.
Now we need to get him to wear a beret and have a drink in hand and just put him on stage and we're good to go.
Right. We call Viacom. They create an office of the television president. He gets punted out of the White House. And after a significant jail term, he can be television president.
I like it.
Sounds
okay.
Good.
Yeah. Because, I mean, he was kind of already television president. It's a thing he clearly likes.
We can open with snake jazz.
Yeah. Okay, so Becky helpfully provided us with a number of facts about wind farms, which, you know, the thing about wind farms is they do help cool the earth because they spin and then blow, you know, cooling air on the environment.
No, good try.
Yeah, because that's what their purpose is, to blow air, apparently.
Yeah. Exactly, yeah. So that's the technology we're discussing right here. Wind farms worldwide generate enough energy to avoid 200 million tons of fossil fuel-based carbon pollution in 2018 alone. Most wind power plants repay their manufacturing carbon footprint in 6 months and offer carbon-free electricity for the remaining 20 to 30 years of operation, according to the American Wind Energy Association. So, you know.
Nobody.
Probably some bias there.
Some bias, but that those are numbers you can check. Yeah. And those numbers have panned out in other places. Eagles. There is no certain number of bald eagles a wind turbine can kill before it must be shut off, you absolute cretin.
But what if there was? You got this whole farm full of wind turbines, right? With little life bars over them, like it's a mobile game.
Yeah.
And, you know, you see the life bar just running out with every eagle they hit. And one by one, your wind turbines are shutting down. So you got to keep building more with new green life bars so that they can hit some more eagles.
So we need to make this game. It's going to be like a RimWorld kind of.
I was thinking Dragster in my head. You know, brrr, boop, 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 boop. An estimated 100 eagles are killed yearly by windmills, with a cumulative figure of 2,000 for all eagles killed by industrial-scale wind turbines since the early 1980s. This comes from a Sean Smallwood, a California-based ornithologist specializing in the study of raptors and wind turbines. Raptors as in birds, not raptors as in
velociraptors. That'd be great.
Wind turbines killed the dinosaurs. That's his next crazy rant. But you see, using fossil fuels, it's made from dinosaurs.
So what happened?
It's not made from dinosaurs. Okay.
So what happened in my head is that velociraptors in Jurassic Park don't fly.
Yep. But they had feathers.
But they had, well, they didn't in Jurassic Park.
No.
But I'm now like, well, okay, so if a wind turbine is going to kill a velociraptor, there clearly needs to be some sort of infrastructure to cause this to happen. So I'm thinking like 300 yards away, there's like a trebuchet that's just sort of whacking velociraptors. We got to get our numbers up.
Now that is a devastating medieval weapon. The velociraptor trebuchet. You just launch a few dozen raptors over the walls and let the city destroy itself.
Yeah, boy, the boiling oil ain't going to help you.
Spoiler alert, they can open doors.
Poisoning, hunting, car collisions, and electrocution on power lines are all bigger killers of bald eagles. Dan Ash, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service Director under Obama. And so, yeah. So, okay. Like, birds are hurt when you put anything in the air. Heck, birds are hurt if you put things on the ground. I've accidentally killed birds with my truck once. Because it was a windy day, and there was, like, a downburst. And this pigeon just went... Like, it was an oddly musical. And I'm like, well, I can't help him. Yikes. I'm going home. Birds. Windmills kill anywhere from 234,000 to 328,000 birds a year. This is the American Wind Wildlife Institute study by federal scientists. Cell radio tower collisions kill 6.8 million bird deaths a year. Domestic cats kill 1.4 to 3.7 billion birds a year. Billion, with a B.
Hang on. Can we go over a little bit of multipliers here real quick?
Yeah, sure.
So if windmills kill at the top, 328,000 birds a year, what are we looking at for cell and radio tower collisions killing 6.8 million? So a cell or radio tower kills about 21 times the amount of birds as windmills.
Right.
Yeah. Is that
holding? Part of that owes to just the great density of cell phone towers that are required versus windmills. Windmills can only be put up in specific places. Cell towers for like a city kind of have to be everywhere. So part Fair of it's enough. Just it's just opportunity cost. And anytime you put something in the air that isn't a tree or anything that a bird doesn't understand, they're going to run into it and bad stuff's going to happen. I mean, how many videos have you seen on YouTube that just, you know, you're watching, like in the case of our house, you're watching news bloopers and then that breaks and the very next video before you can skip it is birds flying into stuff.
All right. You bought me just enough time with the calculator there. So when we move on to cats, cats killed how many?
That would be 1.4 to 3.7 billion.
Okay, so cats kill about 11,200 times as many birds as windmills.
Yeah.
Okay, just to put things in perspective here. So radio towers, about 21 times as many as windmills, and cats about 11,000 times as many as windmills. Okay, all right, just so we're solid on the numbers.
There are, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to ask, where does Randy Johnson fall onto this?
I don't know. Do you count the birds he's at? Because one presumes he's eaten chicken a fair number of times.
Fair enough. Yeah.
But I think he's just got the one, right?
Just the one that exploded.
That just
exploded. Just the one. Randy Johnson kills approximately one bird ever.
I downloaded that video when it happened, I still have the video.
It's a great video. It's just terrible. Oh, it's feathers.
It's horrible because you could, everybody's like, what happened?
Wait, see, the thing was, it was after a holiday, and at the holiday, you know, he's got kind of a country family, so they went out trap shooting, and after trap shooting, you know, he went to the baseball game, turned to his brother-in-law, and went, hold my beer.
So, okay, I try not to, like, bag on people who are fellow cat owners, because there's always that paranoid response that anytime anybody does anything with a cat, oh, you're a bad cat owner, and you're horrible, and those are clearly, your cat clearly has ear mites and is being whipped every day of its life because it did something cute. You're a horrible person, and you should feel horrible yourself. I don't like playing into that thing. I don't. I don't really find a problem with the Chonky Cat. I think Chonky Cats are cute. All right.
Yep.
I am kind of low key, very much against outside cats. I don't get on people's case about it. I'm not very public about it, but like every time somebody I know gets a new cat, I go, hey, do yourself a favor. Keep it indoors.
Right.
Don't let it out. You'll help yourself. You'll help your cat, and you'll help the environment. Like it's good. It's literally good for everybody.
It's one of those sort of hard to swallow pill statements, you know.
Yeah.
When people ask me as an environmental educator, what's the best thing I can do for the environment? Don't have kids.
Mm.
What's the worst thing I can do for the environment? Have a kid. Nobody likes to hear it, but it's a simple fact. And right. When it comes to wild bird conservation, keep your cat indoors.
Right.
Sorry. It's just the fact
and,
of the matter.
Well, okay, even if you hate birds, and there are reasons to hate birds, I think crows are a conspiracy.
they are a conspiracy.
Yeah. It's bad for the cat.
Yeah.
Like, indoor cats have, like, twice the lifespan of outdoor cats. That's like actuarial table level facts. That's just statistics we've collected just because we collect statistics. Do yourself a favor if you have a cat, if you get a new cat. I get it. It's really hard to retrain pets, and that's part of the reason why I don't get on people's cases. But I am pretty hardcore about keeping your cat indoors. That's always been a big point for me. So, I know not everybody I know. Actually,
yeah.
Very few people I'm actually friends with keep their cat indoors.
We're going to get hate email about this.
Oh, totally. Absolutely. And there are always exceptions. There's exceptions to everything I've ever said. There are always edge cases. It's just the fact of life. But if you can keep your cat indoors, keep your cat indoors. For example, I am very lucky. I am exceedingly lucky with Ruth. With Ruth Underfoot, my new cat. Because she was a stray, and strays spend a lot of time outdoors, and that usually gets cats set in their ways, and they're going to want to go outdoors and explore, and like, no, I'm used to leaving, I'm used to crapping under a tree and eating birds, this is my life now, oh, look, it's a ground stake, let me get that worm. Where Ruth spent her time in Tacoma, and decided she'd had enough of it, and doesn't want to return. Like, she does not leave the house, and when she's very protective of the house, and like she'll guard the door against other cats or bugs or worms or slugs. Right. And one time a slug, she didn't care for the slug. She didn't need it.
So to be clear, she started her life outside, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
she was a stray at one point.
She was a stray. She was captured by the Humane Society, and they fixed her and they put the tattoo on her, so she's a hipster cat. And and then we adopted her, and so I figured, well, this is going to be a huge problem because we're going to have to train her to be an indoor cat.
Mm-hmm.
I'm willing to put the investment into it, but I knew she was probably going to escape. That was going to be a big deal, and I might lose her. So one, she's chipped, which is good, but lucky me, she's like, no, I've been outside, I've been there, it sucks, I'm staying here. I saw her put, like, one, like, Mr. Adventure has always been indoors, and he loves escaping, and it's kind of his deal. And he likes going out on the porch and sunning himself now. He's an old man cat now. We're having his cat mitzvah this year, or next year. Like, the year starting next week. So, he used to escape all the time, and he would escape for, like, 2 or 3 days at a time. And it was terrifying to me, because he doesn't know what a road is.
Right.
where, so, but now he's an old man cat and he just wants to go outside and sit on the porch and sun himself. He's not a danger to birds. The one time he caught a mouse, he didn't know what to do with it, so he just let it go in the bathroom, and I shut them, hit the mouse and him in the bathroom together, hoping that nature would take its course. So when I went back in there, they were chilling together on the rug. He's not a danger, you know. So he's out there chilling, and Ruth is standing at the door, and she's like, and she just puts her foot out on the door sill, puts it down, goes, I've been outside. Thanks.
It's still cold out there.
Yeah.
Lava.
Right. I like talking about cats and very little else these days. So keep your cats indoors. Unless you can't, then don't listen to me, or just don't listen to me at all. Nobody else does, you know, except for that whole radio show thing.
I'll give you a free pass if you live in a place where, you know, cats are an indigenous species. You know, if you live in some place where there's Egyptian sand cats and they're just part of the biome, oh, by all means, have your cat outdoors.
Oh, well,
that's fine.
Like I said, there's always edge cases to these things. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. We're going to go back. We're going to keep talking about Trump, I guess. And then do some emails. Today, aren't I? This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. The Evangelical Christian magazine, founded by the late Billy Graham, ran an op-ed at the end of December calling for Donald Trump's removal as president. Christianity Today called Trump's attempted use of political power to coerce Ukrainian leaders to harass and discredit his political opponents a violation of the Constitution and profoundly immoral. Reverend Franklin Graham, who has taken over preaching in his father's stead, blasted the article by repeating Republican talking points. Two of Billy Graham's grandchildren, however, praised the publication for its courage, with granddaughter Jerusha Duford expressing hope that the article would serve as a first step for people to actually stand up.
I was actually kind of amazed that this actually came from a Christian magazine. That was actually very interesting. Although I'm not a big fan of op-eds, because they tend to, like, either if you agree with it, then it's biased. And if you don't agree with it, you don't have an argument against it, because it's literally never researched.
Right.
It's just literally somebody's opinion, so...
I mean, that's as a general rule, but op-eds can occasionally be worthwhile. I mean, but I'm with you. Op-eds are the place where the newspaper editors kick back and relax and sometimes say crazy racist stuff.
Right.
And especially if you're the New York Times.
I was kind of happy to hear about this article, because there's something that I've sort of been wondering for a few years with, you know, Trump's been so popular with a lot of the evangelical crowd, and I'm not going to say the majority, but a lot. And I've been sort of wondering, you know, is there going to be a point where somebody comes around and says, like, hey, actually, you know, adultery is against what we're supposed to do, or cruelty is against what we're supposed to do, or, you know, we're supposed to be kind to foreigners. We're supposed to, you know, treat strangers, you know, whether they're homeless or sex workers or whatever, we're supposed to treat them with open arms and an open heart and generosity. And this is all stuff that's, you know, in the dogma, in the scripture of our religion, as, you know, the highest and most noble things that a person can do. And Trump kind of, well, quite openly, in fact, represents the opposite of all those things. And I've just sort of been waiting to be like, are any of the evangelicals that I know, or any of the evangelicals in this country, any of the evangelicals that are friends, going to come around to a point where they go, you know what, this is absolutely against the scripture that we believe in, and say something. And so I was actually very happy to hear about this magazine article somebody was saying something.
I do mildly troll that one talk show host guy who talks in front of the Constitution like he's Bob Odenkirk from Breaking Bad. I think what I said most recently is, so when are you just going to change your Twitter handle to Mammon and be done with it? it kind of sucks that I can make a joke like that. And for every good thing... The editor for Christian Post has resigned in the wake of his former newspaper's publishing a vehemently pro-Trump editorial, in contrast to rival publication Christianity Today. Nap Nasworth's former employer denounced Christianity Today's op-ed, calling Trump's impeachment a compromise of constitutional due process and asserting strong evangelical support for the president. Nasworth has worked alongside the 2016 editorial team that published an op-ed titled Donald Trump is a Scam, but indicated that the paper's leadership had changed positions to align with Team Trump. He tweeted on Christmas Eve that after taking time off to enjoy the holidays with his family, he'd say more about how Christians sully the name of Christ in their alliance with Trump. So, I don't know. Is this meaningful? I want to pretend like this is the at long last you have, you know, that's the moment we're all waiting for.
Yeah, we're looking for the chink in the armor that Christians are providing Trump, and this was the first one, but is it too little too late? Is it going to help?
Is it going to go anywhere? Is this just somebody
grandstanding?
Now that they've got what they want, now that they think they're getting the maximum return on their investment on this guy, now that their Faustian bargain has returned dividends, are they not now just saying, oh no, this is a bad guy, in order to save face among the American people who can see what they're transparently doing?
Yeah, because they got to think post-Trump.
Right.
Trump is not permanent. As much as he tries to sit there and say he's going to be in office for another 16 years, as he jokes often and often. But, they might be moving past to try and make Pence more favorable.
Mm-hmm.
Because they know that this is limited, and so they're going to have to strategize their next who's post Trump for them to represent them.
Right. Yeah. I don't know where they go from here. I know Franklin Graham is clearly making a play for it. I mean, that's what all this bus touring is he wants to.
I never even considered that. That would be,
oh yeah. I wow. mean, he doesn't want to be. He doesn't want to be his dad or his grandfather. I don't know what their family tree looks like. I don't care about them that hard. That's what this is all about. He's basically constantly on political tour. He goes to churches, but that's not where he spends his time. He goes to state capitals. His bus looks like something you'd own if you were running for president. You know, it's
was it his bus that we saw in Tacoma a couple years ago?
I totally gave it the double deuce. Yeah, I absolutely did. And that's not the first time I've flipped him off. It's becoming kind of a thing. I'm enjoying it. I think he wants to grab the reins for himself, and it's gonna be him and that Matt Shea guy, I swear.
Oh yeah, Matt Shea is definitely trying to position.
That's something we haven't been talking about on the show that I feel like we have, but it's like, how do you talk about, like, the Washington State Legislature right now
has
a terrorist in it.
A domestic terrorist
in it who literally is calling for, not specifically my death, though.
Like a federally recognized domestic
terrorist. And the Republicans aren't turning their back on him. He's not leaving office, and he's intending on introducing new legislation that would allow him to, that basically furthers his kind of racist, definitely theocratic, definitely murderous Christian ideology. That's this state. That's groovy, funky Nirvana, Seattle, Washington.
Well, it's Eastern Washington.
But everybody thinks Seattle is the entire state, and it's not.
It's not.
Yeah, like the Manson-Nixon line runs about five feet behind me. I mean, Tacoma's fairly liberal, but you get outside of Tacoma, things change pretty quick.
Yeah, that happens almost anywhere. There's a metropolitan area, rural divide. It, for whatever reason, in the rural counties, really do like the conservative outlook. And but the thing is, the rural, nobody lives there.
Right.
It's not where the people are. So we're basically, it's land voting.
Yeah, it's land voting. Oh, yeah, I got into that's an ongoing conversation amongst us right now is how voting works and stuff like that. I have some, I'm discovering I have some opinions that some of my friends find surprising. But whatever. So we got some emails here, and I think we'll just go down the line. We'll go in that order. The first comes to us from Utrum, Norway, who writes, and the subject line is William Tell's Tactical Taint Tanner.
I'm sorry, what now?
Yeah, this is going on in our theme of fun and useless tactical items.
So I'm just trying to figure out how to balance the apple.
Actually, I think it'd be easier balancing the apple that way than on your head. Like, there's kind of a natural divot that it would just sort of rest in.
Good point.
But then you're blocking the sun.
Right.
No, you could go, you could move a little bit north or, I guess, south. I don't know what the cardinal directions are when you're in that configuration. but he writes, "Hello, I just wanted to say that I like what you're doing with the show, and I hope you keep doing it, even if you occasionally go on tangents that can be quite confusing for those who have missed some crucial details. Happy orbital period index increment to you all." That's my favorite. So
that had nothing to do with the subject.
Yeah. Well, okay. Yeah. What is that? Is that supposed to be his nickname or something like that?
No, I think he was just helping us. Like, you were on that episode,
yes,
Josh.
I was. Right. No, absolutely. Yeah.
No, people have been sending us like tactical things because I asked.
Gotcha. I see.
For tactical things. And then I posted that podcast extra that was about how, okay, I kind of have a tactical cell phone. But not because I thought it was tactical, but because I needed a cell phone that I wouldn't sit on and break because I'm a man of gravity.
I'm just happy to see that taint sunning has become a perennial topic, if you will.
I'm not. I can't think about this without thinking about Josh Brolin bent over in an awkward position that I really don't want to think about.
That's not your kink?
That is not my kink.
Okay.
But it's burned into my skull.
Yeah, I can't stop thinking about myself. Anyway. Aubrey from Illinois writes, "Hey, Sam, I recently saw that you follow one of my favorite authors on Twitter, John Scalzi. What are your other favorite authors? Maybe there are more similarities?" I will be honest with you. I've only recently started reading John Scalzi. Specifically Agent of the Stars is what I should be reading right now. The people who are the big Scalzi fans are actually Dave and Carol. Dave, who's on this show, and then Dave and Carol, who recently of Hands Free Football, although they rapped recently. They're big John. They turned me on to John Scalzi. I like Dan Simmons, but I... the list of authors that I've read is fairly long, but fairly old. I kind of like the older science fiction for some reason. And I'd be happy. One of the things that I've decided to change is that I would read more for entertainment this year than last, because I've kind of stopped reading novels and I'm reading almost entirely history and tactical stuff. So can I turn that question, Aubrey, can I turn that question on you? Because if you like John Scalzi, and I'm finding him quite compelling, what authors would you suggest I read? I know it's kind of a cheap cop-out, but I'm kind of tired of talking about what I like as far as science fiction go. There's a whole other show I'm on for that. What would you suggest that I read to keep me going? So Leander from Helsinki writes, "Those of you from Christian families, how do you deal with them? I mean, I can easily respect church ceremonies. If I attend, it's because I choose to do so, so I have to respect it. But I can't really choose to stay home and watch Hair on DVD. I either mess up my day and mood, being a fake dummy with everyone else, or I mess their mood by simply not being present. How is it for you?" So I'll start, but I'll go around. This works out pretty well for me in that my family is very much of the, if you don't want to go, don't go, because you're just going to make it bad for everybody. But my family is also not particularly religious. So I think the last time I attended the only time I go to religious ceremonies are either weddings or funerals at this point. Or if they want me to, if somebody wants to yell at me for being an atheist. That's happened a couple of times. But you guys have more religious families than I. So, Josh, how do you interface with this?
Actually, my family is not that religious. I mean, they're pseudo-Christian, kind of like they'll play along, but they don't ever go to church. They don't know any of the underlying theology. So it's weddings and funerals. But like for my cousin, it was a life remembrance that we went to instead of a funeral.
Right.
So we did have a pastor speak. But my cousin was like, "Dude, keep it short on the Jesus stuff." Mm-hmm. And the pastor obliged.
Well,
so
that's nice.
It was actually kind of nice.
Is it wrong for me to think that's fairly rare? Because there's
no, it's rare.
Okay, because I'm used to like somebody say, "Hey, light on the Jesus talk. And then the pastor goes, well, that's my job. I'm not here for you. I'm here for God.
Yeah, when my grandfather died, probably about almost a decade now, about 9 years ago, mm-hmm. This was an actual funeral, and the sermon was all about Jesus, and then there was a 5-minute blurb about my grandfather. And that made me mad. That roiled me like no other.
That's pretty crappy.
Right. We're here to remember the dead.
Yes, right.
This specific one.
We're here to help you grieve. Yeah. We're here to remember.
Wait, they don't believe he's dead. Why are you talking about living people?
Right. Exactly.
And then my other grandfather, my aunt was sitting there proclaiming how proud she is that she did a deathbed conversion for him. And that really, really, that was like, this is... like even before I even was even thought of myself as an atheist, but just like she was just super proud about how she scared this old dying man into believing into God at the last minute. Yeah. And that really, really angers me.
Yeah.
A lot of the members of my family are pretty religious. But one thing that's kind of neat about it is they're the type of religious people that actually know their scripture and know it very well. Mm. And so if we end up talking about religion, we end up sort of talking about more stuff that we have in common, because I also like to study scripture, and we end up talking more about, you know, positive ethics as they're reflected in scripture. And then I'll contrast that with, you know, things like kin selection or reciprocal altruism and evolution, and show how, you know, that some of the ideas that are espoused in biblical texts are actually great survival strategies, not just for our species, but for many social species. We tend to not get into it as an argument, but more of almost like a philosophical sort of anthropological discussion. And other than that, you know, if somebody doesn't bring up religion, probably nobody's going to talk about it.
Yeah. Like I probably spend because of who I am and where I spend a lot of my day, I spend less of my time having to deal with religious people as I do having to deal with tech libertarians. And so I find that a lot of my efficacious anti-apologetics work, or my street epistemology, for as much as I hate that freaking term, it has to do more with talking with libertarians than it does with having to talk with religious people. And if you think I'm drawing a direct correlation between the supernatural dogma of religious people and the supernatural dogma of libertarians, you are absolutely correct. That is actually what I'm doing. A French teen stands alleged of killing an elderly priest who had abused 3 generations of one family. Father Roger Mazzasoli was discovered dead from being beaten and asphyxiated in his home in November, with various media outlets reporting that a crucifix had either been forced down his throat or pressed against it. Mazzasoli has been barred by his diocese from both public and private ministry since 2009, after a history of sexual abuse dating back to the 1960s was exposed. The 19-year-old suspect, known as Alexandre V, has been hospitalized for mental problems that his father Stephanie attributed to abuse by Mazzasoli. Alexandre's grandfather and father were also among the priest's alleged victims, with the grandfather committing suicide in 1987 upon learning that Mazzasoli had abused Stephanie. Yeah, let's end on a good story, huh?
it's hard to actually come up with an opinion of this, because murder is bad, obviously, but also, like, what do you do when you find out that your entire family has been terrorized by the same person and nobody is doing about it?
Yeah. Right.
And nobody's doing anything about it.
Yeah. And people are saying, well, the Pope just said they're going to open up the things and immunity isn't a thing. We haven't actually seen that yet. That hasn't actually happened yet. So that could just be more talk at this point. And it's kind of weird with, I kind of brought this up last kind of intentionally, because I've been seeing a lot of, well, let's get along with religious people on the holidays or whatever. And then some of my atheist friends saying there's something about the popes on Netflix and how great it is and how I should watch it.
No.
No.
I saw it.
No.
And I'll be a little bit honest with you. I
didn't read the details of this article. I just saw that abusing priest died by having crucifix jammed down his throat, and my thought was, well, that's pretty metal.
Yeah, it's kind of, it is a poetic kind of end.
Yeah.
But Again, we're talking about a murder that can't be condoned.
Yeah. No, well.
Also, we're talking about a victimizer.
Yeah. Yeah.
My hot take on this story was, like, just like you said, my first thought is, wow, that's pretty metal.
Yeah.
And then my second thought was, well, not all heroes wear capes. And then I sort of condemned myself for that. And my third thought was, this guy abused three generations of people. And, you know, grandpa committed suicide. Well, he turned grandson into a murderer.
Right.
That's what he's done. That is among the worst things that he's done, is he made somebody a murderer.
Right.
And
well, not all heroes wear capes, but the villain in this story definitely wears a cape because he's a priest.
Right.
Ta-da! That's what I can do.
Strong clothes. Strong clothes.
This is Ask an Atheist. Our website is atheist.radio. Our phone number is 844-SKEPTIC, or 844-753-7842. Our Twitter is Ask an Atheist WA. See you guys next week. And if you follow me on Patreon, check into my Patreon right now, because this morning I just posted a video with me sitting at my bench for about an hour trying to fix things, nearly exploding a USB cable. It's a new thing I'm trying out. I really want feedback on it. Please get back to me and tell me what you think if you're a Patreon. Also, thank you for being a patron. You're really helping us keep us going. See you guys next week.